up, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination number 350. Yes, that's a huge number, 350. This is the thanks edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. Every time I hit a milestone like this, it just causes me to kind of sit back and look at the history of the show since it came online in January of 2006, and I'm incredibly grateful for the fact that people are still listening to me, or the fact that people even started to listen to me at all. So it's not that I don't think about it other times. It's just when the numbers get like this, when it's like 350, I mean, it's a nice round number. You're sitting there looking at it and you're going, wow, that means there's 349 other numbered episodes. There's about four or five other episodes beyond that. So I know I'm up over 350, but still, it's just an astounding number, and I cannot help but thank each and every one of you for listening in and tuning into my particular brand of insanity. It's not quite crazy or anything like that, but I know it's a little bit off kilter. So you are, in fact, listening to the Caffeination Podcast. We are lovingly nestled along with all of our other episodic friends over at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. It kind of went with the name of the show. Alright, so we have a ton of great and cool things to talk to you about today on the Caffeination. We are, in fact, a member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Find out more about what that means over at techpodcasts.com. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. That's Blueberry without the E's. It's kind of like a social network site for podcasts. It's an interesting little spider web of who listens to who, what's going down on each one of the shows. It's a wonderful place to head on out to see if there's any other interesting shows that you might be missing. And yeah, there's just a ton of great content over at our website as well. We have we have recipes and a whole bunch of other stuff that's not necessarily linked in the blog. It's just kind of off the beaten path there. There's links for recipes, there's links for a whole bunch of other different and interesting things that are over there, as well as a whole bunch of different ways to contact me. The easiest of which being email. If you'd like to send me a comment, feedback, or suggestion, please feel free to email me at caffeination@gmail.com, and the rest of the stuff's over at the site, like I said. All right, so we have a bunch of interesting little things to talk about today. We're going to be talking about robots, Linux, Morse code, and a ton of coffee and food bits collected at the end. As I like to say, they're there for you to savor. So we have an interesting contest that we've been a part of for the past couple weeks called the Summer of Podcasts contest over at podcastmadness.com. And we have a rather cool event happening this week in that this is our week to give out the code. So without further ado, I just did want to introduce Jeffrey Powers from the Geekazine podcast. The other show's giving out separate codes. I checked out the list of everybody's codes, and no, I'm not going to tell you what they all are, but I will tell you the fact that everybody has a different code, so you have to head on over to each individual podcast to get their code, head on over, and then you can to Podcast Madness after the fact, enter the code in, and you can be entered to win a whole bunch of cool prizes that they're over there. This week is the Caffeination Podcast, Mike Tech Show, My Geek Week, and Snark Infested Waters, so you can head on over there for links to everybody's different shows. But without further ado, here's Jeffrey to tell you a little bit about the Caffeination's part in all of this.
Hey everybody, this is Jeffrey Powers, and you are listening to the Caffeination Podcast, and it is time for your code for the Summer of Podcasts found at www.podcastmadness.com. Caffeination's code is PODCAST, P-O-D-C-A-S-T. Go over to podcastmadness.com, enter in that code along with your name and your email, and you can win some great prizes. Thanks again to Caffeination Podcast for being a contributor, and good luck in the Summer of Podcasts contest.
It's a really cool contest, like I said before. Just our code word is podcast. Despite the fact that it might seem to be a very simple word, it is the only show that you will get that code on there. So head on over to podcastmadness.com and enter in PODCAST. All right, moving right along, we did want to make mention of the fact that the Caffeination is also proudly sponsored by GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting allows you to be much more productive and get a lot more done in significantly less time, specifically because you can work and meet from absolutely anywhere. You can meet right from your desk, from a hotel room, from, you know, your mom's house if you're there for a holiday. The The possibilities are absolutely endless, especially with what you can do with the product. As long as you have your laptop there, you can demonstrate your product, you can conduct a sales demonstration. Even if you're on the side of the road and you have a one of those little uplink things on the in your laptop, it's great. GoToMeeting allows you to do all of this. It's one-click meeting to host and join the meeting in seconds. You can host it from either a Mac or a PC, and it doesn't matter. They don't need the software to actually view it, so you can, hey, here, go to this URL, and then bang, they're up and running in literally seconds. So for a free 30-day trial, visit www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts to secure your free 30-day trial. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They're allowing us to do all kinds of crazy cool stuff and continue on as we march towards 400. 400 usually happens, or the 100 episodes usually happen right around the time of our anniversary, so I'm guessing sometime in the early January we're going to hit 400 episodes. And that's just going to be special as well. So right now we're halfway through the year, 350 episodes, or 49 rather, in the can. We're just going to stop babbling on and get you on into the rest of the stuff for today's show. Up first, Burger King wants your precious kinetic energy. Yes, you heard me hear correctly. Burger King would like you to have a couple more Whoppers so that you can increase a little payload on a little system they got going in a couple of little places. Burger King has entered into a joint venture to try out the little kinetic energy plates in the drive-through area. So as your car goes over it, it compresses these little plates and ever so slightly, and allows them to reclaim some of the reclaim some of the energy, but it allows them to generate a small amount of electricity. Now they're hoping to start to run the appliances on the inside of these things off of some of the kinetic energy generated by the drive-through. This is a great idea, and I like the fact that it's actually in one of the more high traffic areas. I mean, I think it would be even better if they could actually put it in the entrance and exit to the entire thing so that you're forced to drive over it no matter what. But they're saying that there might be some different speed issues, that the slower you go over these things, the better it actually is. So they're looking at the different placements of where kinetic road plates, I mean, beyond Burger King, looking at different placements of where these things might actually be good. For instance, car parks, toll plazas, anywhere where there's a slow, definitive speed where you're forced to kind of, you know, rein it in. It would be a good way to kind of reclaim some of the kinetic energy. I think it would be kind of cool to have them in toll plazas specifically, because as you slow down, as you hunt for change or whatever it is, man, before you hit pass it all, you know, not talking about Easy Pass or anything like that, but you'd be able to actually power the booths there. So I think that'd be kind of cool. It might even help reduce some of the burden on the electric grid. One of the other stories that I didn't actually link up was talking about the issue with some of these new energy plans that are coming out there. They're saying, what happens if somebody builds like massive energy in farms in Nebraska, and then they have to run a line to New York to power New York? Well, that's not going to be where it's at. Where it's going to be at is the locally generated power. So if you have just tons of small wind turbines in a city, or you build things like kinetic energy plates into stoplights or something like that, stop signs might even be an interesting way to actually go about this. I mean, yes, there's going to be an initial huge investment in infrastructure to actually get this to work correctly, but the article said, and I really wish I could find it now, the article said that a lot more local power is going to be needed because it's incredibly inefficient to pipe it from other areas. So, you know, unless you have a river in your area, you know, hydroelectric might not be the thing for you. It's kind of like if you're playing SimCity 2000, like way back in the day, it only worked, you know, hydroelectric only worked if you had waterfalls in your immediate map. You couldn't pump hydroelectric power in from another environment. So just take that with a grain of salt, and it might just be that kinetic energy is the way to go for right now for some of the things. It works on the same principle as the braking recovery for a lot of the hybrids that are out there. All right, moving right along, the next little thing we have up for you here is Linux that boots in 1 second, actually under 1 second. They're saying this is unbelievable. It's a demonstration of an embedded Linux, like for a dashboard of a car. They turned the power off, turned it back on, and it power cycled in just over 1 second, 1.5 seconds. However, if you watch the video to watch this thing turn on and off in 1 second is actually 2 minutes and 28 seconds long, so it could actually power on 200 some odd times in that period of time. But what they're saying, or actually significantly less, we'll say around like 150 times, but what they're saying is that due to the circuit board that they had in the demo unit, it actually took 0.8 milliseconds for the power to actually get to the chip. So if they had built a better board for it to sit on, it would be able to actually be up and running in under a second. So the fact that, you know, so it basically took 0.7 seconds to have this system up and running. So it had a speedometer, had a backup camera, had all this other stuff. So it's an interesting little idea to see exactly how quick Linux can get. And talking about how quick Linux can get and how much it might save people some money, the U.S. Postal Service has decided to give a stamp, quote-unquote, approval to FOSS. What they're trying to do is they're going to be switching 1,300 of their servers that manage its package tracking system to a Linux environment. So the original system was written in COBOL. It was done on Solaris boxes, and these are all high-end. I mean, COBOL is a very, very old language. Yes, there's a lot of places that still actually use it right now, but you need to have specialized programs for it. It's not like you could go into a high school and say, hey, does anybody know COBOL? Because most of them aren't going to anymore. The time when they taught COBOL in high school was a little bit ago, in fact, if ever. I think I might know 2 COBOL programmers out of all of the programmers that I've worked with at the university. So, I mean, it's an incredibly small number, and it's an incredibly specialized and highly high-paying area to actually be involved in. The new one is actually converted for Linux. I don't exactly know what that means, because I think you can compile COBOL on Linux, maybe they converted it to C, maybe they converted it. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other different languages they could have done it. But what really kind of stuck out here is that the United States Postal Service has figured out that they could significantly lower their cost. Now, they're not going to actually put a dollar sign out there, but they're saying that they're only using open source software for this, and the government in and of itself is tightening its belt. And one of the areas where they really have to tighten is the Postal Service. The Postal Service is noticing a sharp decrease in volume of mail. And you'd think that would be a good thing, except for the fact that the infrastructure is built to handle a much larger volume of mail, so it's a lot of dead weight at the top end. So since they're shifting to more packaging and less letters, the ideal situation would be for them to use less money overall to end up tracking these packages around, because that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to follow their package and see if your iPod can actually arrive before it was shipped. Most of the iPods that I've ever seen on the shipping channel are coming out of Shanghai, and every once in a while you get one that ships that is delivered because it has to cross the international date line before it actually ships, or close enough too. So it was like a 2-hour trip on the clock. So it's kind of cool to see that happen. It's going to be interesting to see exactly how much the post office ends up changing with this. Maybe it'll make its way into other areas of government as well. All right, now the next little thing that's up here is an interesting thing, and I had never actually thought about this. There is a certain value to private information. There's a certain value to public information, and I'm a big proponent of the fact that information wants to be free. Well, it just so happens that the 10 standard ink blots for the Rorschach test have become public domain. Now, here is the issue. The way the Rorschach test works, if you have prior exposure to the standardized ink blots, it can affect greatly the outcome of the test. So since they've entered into the public domain, Wikipedia is struggling with the fact as to whether or not it should put it up there. Because if they were to put these 10 images up there, then they are going to basically contaminate the population that is interested in it, which is a bad thing, because it's kind of like a baseline psychological test. Now, if you've ever read Flowers for Algernon, you know that that you're not supposed to see anything there. There's not really anything there. And you either have to be incredibly smart or incredibly on the low end of the scale for it to mean nothing to you. So however, that's only at the first glance of these things. You need to be, introduced to them. That's why if at the beginning of the test they would ask you if you've ever taken the test before, because I guess they would have to use different images or flip them all upside down. Who knows? But it's a very real issue that kind of has to be tackled, and it kind of begs the question as to when information only has value because it is private, because it is not widely disseminated, what is the proper thing to do here? I personally would kind of lean towards the fact that if you really want to see them, you should be able to go through steps to actually get to see them, but they should not be publicly and widely displayed. So I'm like, if you put them up on Wikipedia, you would have to go through like a CAPTCHA or something before you could actually reveal them. I know that that would end up invalidating a lot of a number of individuals from seeing them, but at that point in time, you know, Wikipedia would say if you're just looking up Rorschach tests just because you wonder what they are, you wouldn't necessarily see the images right off the bat. However, on the flip side of that, if you really did want to see the images and see what all the fuss was about, rather than just reading The Watchmen, then you could do it with, you know, minimal issue. It would just be kind of like the brown paper bag around the illicit magazine. It's not saying that the magazine shouldn't be sold, it's just saying that certain people don't need to see it right off the bat. So that's my solution. Hopefully they'll come to something similar. And if anybody knows anybody in Wikipedia, pass that along. Maybe it would work for them. All right, now the next little thing we have up for you here is kind of an interesting little thing about Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh, being at the opposite end of Pennsylvania as it is, there's a good-natured, friendly rivalry, and sometimes it's not so friendly, depending on the sport. Hockey, not so much. Football, it's kind of an indifference between the two teams, unless they're playing, and then, of course, both sides pick their sides. Go Eagles. But, you know, basketball, I think we have the win there because they don't actually have a team, and baseball, it's been pretty much the Phillies for quite a while compared to the Pirates. All sports aside, you know, it's an interesting city. I've been there. I actually really enjoy going there. But one of the funniest things about it is, or at least one of the recent funny things about it, is Pittsburgh has a 33-story tall Grant building that supposedly spells out the name of the city in Morse code. So bright that it can actually be seen for 100 miles, except for the fact that somebody actually took a looking at it, and it doesn't spell Pittsburgh. It spells P-I-T-E-T-S-B-K-R-R-H. Yeah, so a former ham radio enthusiast at Pittsburgh Global actually decoded the message and posted the gaffe on YouTube, and it clearly shows that the tower is misspelled. He said he noticed the problem when he casually looked up and saw the signal broadcasting the letter K. And he said, you know what, that's not really supposed to be there. So the representatives for the tower's owner could not say how long the tower had been advertising the wrong city, especially one that had all that kind of consonants in a row. So it's kind of an interesting little thing to throw up there. The next little thing we have up for you here, again from over at Gizmodo, is CableLox, a cable organizer for the obsessively neat geek. I love organized cables. Being that I have tons of cables all over my desk at this point in time, like the DSL, or not the DSL, the cable modem and the voice over IP solution are all over here. My router with all five different boxes are plugged into it. I have two computers, a monitor, a mixing board with all kinds of audio equipment, and two printers, all sitting within a very small area. The cabling is an absolute mess. So I always like innovative solutions for how you could tackle this. And CableLox looks like it could be an interesting solution. It looks like a breadboard that you can actually clip and take apart and actually slip the cables in different organizational patterns, and it only costs $20 for two. So it looks pretty cool, and I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was interesting. It's just a tiny little one-off. All right, next little thing that we have up for you here. I'm pretty sure everybody out there has ever heard of a server cluster, or if you haven't, I can take 3.5 seconds to explain it. A server cluster is a bunch of servers. That's basically it. They all work together to do something, so if you have a web cluster, then, you know, it's like a bunch of websites are served from a bunch of different servers. And they usually work in load balancing, so if, you know, one website's really getting hammered with traffic, then the other servers would pick up the slack and end up dealing all the other websites out. So if you're talking about a server for computational stuff, if one server was working really hard and getting slammed with a lot of different calculations, it would kind of push the other equations out or shift some of the other work off to different servers and kind of make sure that they all worked as evenly as possible to do the most work in the most efficient manner. So, what does this all have to do with the story we're talking about? How about an iPhone server farm? Yeah, I don't really go in for the iPhone news all that often because it's kind of a popular culture trap. The iPhone is a very widely available gadget, and there's so much hype and so much information and news, and I'm not going to be reporting on every single little gadget or phone cover that comes out for it. However, this one kind of stood above and beyond the test. This is a crazy little idea. It looks like a tiny little lunchbox with a ducky on it, and it has 5 iPhones inside of it, and it's actually a prototype that allows you to house up to 5 of these things, and it runs a software called Serverman that actually allows you to turn any iPod Touch, Windows Mobile phone, or an iPhone into network storage, and also a mini web server. So you can actually host websites from a cluster of iPhones. I thought it was insane. I thought it was pretty cool. And there's a lunchbox that looks like it has an airbrushed ducky on the side. I mean, what is, more do you need? Now, moving right along, how about a rechargeable air horn for super fans out there? This is one thing that I always thought was kind of funny. You have all these air horns and these noisemakers that, after they're done, it's just basically an aerosol can with a horn at the end of it, so it's nothing really special. But however, it's incredibly wasteful, especially if you're going to go around honking at all kinds of different games and stuff like that. So after you're done with it, you're supposed to just pitch it. Well, how about this? This is a $30 Eco Blaster. It's actually a rechargeable air horn. So it's kind of strange. So they're saying that this thing is incredibly loud, 115 decibels of honk, good for 70 blasts before a recharge is needed. The package includes a pump, but any bike pump or gas station air pump will do. So basically you need some compressed air, and you too can rock yourself out with a little Eco Blast. So this thing might actually be really cool because we have an incredibly small rowboat that we use for fishing. However, one of the things that you need to take with you on a boat is that you have to have some sort of horn to signal to other boaters that, hey, you know, I'm over here. No matter the size of the craft. So we've used air horns in the past, never had to actually fire one off, but I think an Eco Blaster might be an interesting side note to have. Then you could always, just shove it underwater and kind of give the fish a little sonar disruption too. Now, I'm not advocating that by any stretch of the imagination, but if you wanted to go Crocodile Dundee fishing where you just start tossing quarter sticks, that might work as well. All right, moving right along, carved computer desk and keyboard. Yes, you heard me correctly. This is an entirely carved out of wood computer desk and keyboard that is just it's an interesting little art piece, I would say. I don't really know how functional it is. I personally like to move my stuff all over the desk. So if the keyboard isn't in the right place, I'm going to shift to the right, shift to the left, angle it one way, angle it another. This is a lovely piece of furniture that actually has all of the keys individually carved out and set into the desk as inlays. And I'm assuming that it works. It's kind of a one-off at this point in time. It's made out of wood and brass, they say, and it actually works. So each one of these is what appears to be laser cut out of a sheet of veneer that's on top of it. It's gorgeous, but it's just not functional for my own taste. I wanted to share with all the other woodworking enthusiasts that are out there. Next little thing we have, how many of you have ever thought about the fact that your router and your internet connection is always on, especially when you're not home? Well, unless you're somebody like me and you like to get into your server or into your workstation, desktop, laptop, whatever it is, unless you'd like to get into that system from off campus, as it were, unless you'd like to get into it from work or anything else like that, there's no need to have all that stuff available. So how about taking your keys off a ring that is attached to a router, and once the keys are gone, the router shuts off. So it's basically a way of putting all your internet connection on standby, saving you a little electricity, saving you a little hassle so that other people aren't using your network connection. But the idea behind this things, it's a router that hangs on the wall. They don't show you any cabling going to or from it, so obviously it's run through the wall, so that's a little bit of a hand-me-down work that you have to take care of, but there are four hooks that work on it. As long as one set of keys is actually hanging on one of the hooks, the router will work. So they're saying that there's two different benefits to this. The first is, hey, you always know where your keys are, and the second is it kind of forces you to remember that, okay, yes, when somebody's going to be home, they have to go over there, they have to hang this up, and it's a way to kind of cut down on the usage bills. So, hey, I thought it was pretty cool and interesting, so I wanted to share it with the group. All right, the next little thing we have up for you here is petroalgae. This stuff looks like Soylent Green, especially because they're saying it's going to be a food and fuel source and a single renewable source. It's just kind of weird and freaky at the same point in time. But giant algae fields are supposed to be able to do two things simultaneously. The first thing is they're supposed to be able to provide biomass for the use in biodiesel and clean energy and ethanol and all that stuff, which is great. It's a replacement for fossil fuels. However, it's incredibly expensive to do that. So they talked about actually making food products and food additives from the algae itself because it's incredibly nutritious and selling that. So that way it would be a subsidy on the expensive process of turning it into fuel, and it would keep the fuel at approximately the same cost as fossil fuels rather than higher. As long as they're buying algae cakes, then it'll drive down the cost of actually producing the fuel. So I thought that was pretty cool and interesting. Next little thing we have up for you here, I have talked about this before. These are called robots that are named Eater, E-A-T-R. They're searching for nutrients in the one picture. This is linked from over at Crunch Gear. But the idea behind these robots is they are battlefield robots that are capable of actually extracting energy out of biomass. And everybody seems to be jumping on the bandwagon that, yes, biomass on a battlefield is dead bodies. So I don't think that they would ever admit to, hey, that's what's going to happen. The makers of these things are probably going to be more along the lines of, hey, no, they're going to be scrubbing foliage, but hey, if these things are running across the desert and they happen to find a womp rat that somebody shot with their T-16, then maybe, you know, they might just put it into the back of the hopper and chug along their merry way. The other weird thing about these robots, these Eater robots, is that they are sniper bots, so they are capable of firing a weapon. So these things might go on the ultimate hunt and hunt the ultimate prey, so I, for one, salute our robotic overlords as they attempt to conquer us. Next little thing we have going for you here is the last little thing in the Geek Cruft section here at the Caffeination Podcast. Transformer cufflinks are exactly what meets your eye. So they are not more than meets the eye. They are a Autobot and a Decepticon. And that's pretty much it. They're $20 for a pair. And they are black embossed silver metal cufflinks. I think they're awesome. But at the same point in time, you know, I kind of wish they would have done a little bit more. All right, moving right along to the food and caffeinated bits section here at the Caffeination Podcast. We are currently running on the same batch of coffee beans from Sweet Maria, so we have kind of a mix going between different roasts of the Colombians. It's called a checkerboard mix, so it's basically a lighter roast and a darker roast mixed together in one thing. And it's produced a nice full-bodied cup, and I'm currently enjoying it as we rock out on this episode. The first little story that we have up for you here is actually a fun little gadget that I found over at ThinkGeek. This is called Cook Like a Caveman, the Homo Sapiens Caveman Kitchen Tool. It's a giant piece of sandstone with a leather strop on it. It's shaped like a club. They say that it has a couple different things it can do. It's made for grinding like a pestle, so you can grind and grate garlic or ginger, or knife sharpening. The only thing I would suggest to people is if you're going to be sharpening kitchen knives, use the steel that came with your set of kitchen knives, unless you have big nicks in the blade, because if you're going to be trying to sandstone sharpen something, it leaves a much rougher edge. Especially if you're cutting meat, you want that nice smooth edge, and the steel that's included will give you a lot better. So they're saying this big club can actually tenderize meat. It's $40, which is a little bit out of the price range that I would buy for a kitchen club. I thought it was awesome, especially some of the action shots they got going, so I wanted to pass it along. Next little thing we have up for you here is an interesting link to I don't know how to describe this gentleman. He's a artist who works in kitchen food service geekery, is the easiest way to put it. If you go over to leapmotif.com, that's 1337motif.com, you'll find an artist who actually uses blocks of wood, walnut, maple, oak, as pixels, and he glues them all together with food service grade glue and then sands them down to a nice finish. So he actually has Space Invader coasters listed over there. He's planning a bunch of Pac-Man themed cutting boards, and that's cool as it is. He also has an incredibly awesome cutting board that I'm putting up here directly for my brother-in-law Steve. It's a Triforce cutting board. You don't get much cooler than this thing. It is currently sold out, unfortunately. It's an incredible dark maple with a light blonde wood in the middle. This thing is beautiful. I'm guessing it was probably around $150. This one's listed over at Etsy, but the stuff that this guy does is beautiful beyond belief. And he's actually worked out a deal with ThinkGeek.com to provide for $130 each handmade cutting boards that are Space Invader cutting boards. These things are big, massive, thick, and chunky. They're the butcher block style things, and they have the dark Space Invader alien on the middle of them. I love these things. If I had enough disposable income, I would definitely head on over there and grab one of them right quick. All right, moving right along. Everybody's getting in on the color-changing paint thing for mugs. They have warning toxic, do not touch. It's a nice bright coffee mug, which I personally would enjoy and love. And when you put the hot beverage in it, guess what? it turns green, so it's a little Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff. Kind of looks like it's oozing off the top. I thought that was pretty funny and wanted to pass it along. Next little thing that we have over here is a compact barbecue grill by a company called Rocal. Now, the idea behind this thing is it's supposed to look like a box mounted on the wall, specifically with a little bit of ductwork going up. And they're saying that it's for use in apartment buildings, well, or other places where you need to have a covert and small grill. Now, here's the problem that I would have. There's one very fatal flaw for this. I don't personally think that I want a grill attached to my house. I like having the grill out away from the house. That way, if there's a nice large fire, it's going to burn anything it's attached to and not burn the house down. So that might be one of the reasons in apartments. We had a portable grill that we put out on the balcony, and it was always off on the farthest end of the balcony. Even though we weren't allowed to do it, we still did it anyway. But, you know, that way, if anything really went down, you could just pitch it over the balcony. And, you know, three stories down, it would hit a bunch of grass, and it would be well away from the actual building. Attaching it to the building, maybe not so much. Maybe if they found a way to work it into a railing or a wrought iron railing kind of work, it might work a little bit better. I mean, that would be one of the main things that I would actually really miss if we moved back into our apartment at any point in time, is I really love being able to grill at a moment's notice. They're saying that it has an interesting little ash collection bin that can collect 4 pounds of ashes before you actually have to dispose of it, and that's pretty cool. Alright, moving right along. We have two little stories left here at the Caffeination Podcast, then we are going to head you out on your way. The first up here is an interesting little thing. I really wish I'd been looking all day and all of yesterday to find the other version of these mugs that I've seen. These are called Pantone Espresso Cup and Saucer Sets. It's a set of 4 Demitasse glasses that actually have different Pantone colors of brown. They're different specifically engineered color chips to perfectly match things that are supposed to be in real life. In printing and in plotting, we use Pantone colors a lot of the times to get exacting color as things print out. So for this set of 4, you can get it's $49.99. The idea behind these things is that, you know, the Pantone 1545 is espresso, the Pantone 175C is Americano, 464C is a latte, and 1395C is a cappuccino. That is if the cappuccino was all mixed up as opposed to made correctly. I love this idea, but there was at one point in time a coffee or a tea mug that actually had different shades of Pantone chips going around the inside of the rim so that you could actually point to one of the chips and say, this is how I want my coffee or this is how I want my tea, so they could add the milk until it was that particular shade. That was a much better use, because at this point in time you have the ones say, oh hey, look, I'm drinking out of the espresso. Once somebody says, hey, I want an Americano, are they going to walk that Demitasse over there and say, hey, how does this measure up? Well, no, because they're not going to be making an Americano in a Demitasse glass. That's just how it goes. You don't make that in that. So I thought it was really cool and interesting. It's just 50 bucks is a little bit high of a price point to actually be rocking that out. And then the last little thing that we got going for you here at the Caffeination Podcast is a single serve espresso machine that is unbelievably beautiful. Now, there's a lot of single-serve espresso machines that are out there right now. There's no price point on this one, but I'm just going to hazard a guess. Between the MyPressi Twist and the Aeropresso ones that are both roughly anywhere from like $100 to $150, I'm guessing it's going to be somewhere in that price range. Again, you have to provide your own hot water. This one is battery-operated, so unlike the MyPressi Twist, where it's operated by CO2, and unlike the Handpresso, which is actually, you know, fully manual, which I actually really think is cool. I would love for those people to send me a demo model. I'm just putting that out there. This is all done by batteries. You have to use the espresso pod, so that's a little bit of a mark against it for me personally. But it looks like a cool way to have espresso on the go. I'm all up for taking your coffee on the go. I'd like to thank everybody for listening here to the Caffeination Podcast. It's been a great episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Episode number 350. For each and every one of you, no matter how much of this episode or any other episode you've ever listened to, thank you so much for giving me your time and allowing me to hopefully entertain you throughout this show. If you are looking for this podcast and any of its other episodic friends, please head on over to www.caffeination.com. Any comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail can be fired off to caffeination@gmail.com, and anything else is listed over at the webpage. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for listening. Stay caffeinated, people.